everybody. Welcome back from that short little break. I thought we'd have the 10:15, but that's good. We're going to start early. We have our presenters from Property Valuation Service Corporation, PVSC. We have Paul Beasley and Ron Tremblay. Welcome. You're welcomed.
Good morning.
Morning. And you can start whenever you're ready.
All right. Thank you very much, Your Worship, and Council. Pleasure to be here, staff as well. I guess it's been a couple of years since we actually stood physically in front of you. I thought we were here last year, but I guess we were virtual last year. But it's great to be here again and see all the activity that's in the cranes outside around the building and that type of thing. So a very good news story for sure. We're going to probably take about 20 minutes to walk through our presentation. And if you wish, you can stop us along the way and ask questions or wait to the end or whatever and go from there. So I'm going to start the presentation.
You can probably drive it from the mouse if you want, Paul.
Well, let's just see what we got here. I think I can handle that.
Oh, good.
Rod drives the bus when we're doing virtual of that, so it's great to be back here and be able to just to get through it.
But,
so today we're going to talk a little bit about property assessment in Nova Scotia. Some of this will be a recap from previous years for you. So I'm going to go through this part fairly quickly. It's kind of a public service announcement on behalf of PVSC, just as a reminder. Then I'm going to pass it over to Rod to walk you through some of the numbers. He'll talk a little bit about the capped assessment program and the inquiry and appeal period, which is almost over. So first and foremost about PVSC, we're created under the Property Valuation Service Corporation Act, and we assess property in Nova Scotia as per the Nova Scotia Assessment Act. There's a little bit of crossover with the Municipal Government Act, but not a whole lot. But so we have our own legislation, and as you have the Municipal Government Act. We're municipally funded. We're independent. We're a not-for-profit corporation funded by all 49 of the municipalities. We're governed by a board of directors. Right now, it's either 10 or 11 directors. You'll know Joe Feeney, of course, the deputy mayor of Mahone Bay. He's our chair this year. And we have approximately 130 employees working remotely from 62 communities across Nova Scotia, covering all of Nova Scotia. We have several right here in the Lunenburg, Bridgewater, Mahone Bay area, including Rod himself, who lives just outside of the town of Lunenburg. So the Nova Scotia Assessment Act requires that we assess at market value, which I think you know. A couple of aspects to market value or the values on the assessment roll. Market value being the amount in which, in the opinion of the assessor, would be paid if it were sold on a date prescribed by the director. I'll remind you of that date in a second. In the open market by a willing seller and a willing buyer. So we take the market value at that date prescribed. Then we also, the assessment will include the amount that reflects the state of the property as it existed on the first day of December. So we take the market value, then we add the physical characteristics of the property that right up to December the 1st, or we make sure that we have it as up to date as we can on the physical aspects of the property right before the roll goes out. As far as market value and the sales we use in our analysis, we don't necessarily consider foreclosure sales, tax sales, family sales. Most of the time, those are not open market sales, or they have influences that result in it not being a market sale. So we look at market sales. That's how we do our analysis. Some 35 or 40,000 sales across the province, and we look at them all, and we determine which are considered market sales. So the important date, the date prescribed by the assessor for the 2023 roll, which is the roll we just sent out a few weeks ago, for 2023, it's the base date is what we called it, the date prescribed. It's the value on January 1st, 2022, so we're 1 year back, based on sales that took place over the 2021 calendar year. So all the sales that took place in 2022, that'll be in the 2024 roll. The 2021 year, we use that those sales to analyze to create the 2023 roll. So the state date, which is December the 1st, which I spoke about, the characteristics, it reflects the characteristics and physical state of the property as at December the 1st. So we're a year back on the market value date, but we add in the physical characteristics, or, you know, we make sure we get the characteristics as accurate as we can. Things like building permits, we'll add that in right up to December the 1st to make sure we capture that value for the roll. So that creates the assessment roll. This year, we sent it out on January the 9th. And once we send it out on the 9th of January, it starts the appeal period. They have property owners have 31 days in which they can appeal their assessment if they feel that it's incorrect or inaccurate or does not reflect the market value, that type of thing. So they have until February the 9th, and they have until midnight February the 9th, and we need to receive the appeal back to us by midnight February the 9th. It can't be in the mail or anything like that. Is there a question, Your Worship?
I'm going to have a question, and then I'm going to turn it over to Mayor Bolivar-Getson. When you say you take in consideration building permits, is that what you said?
Well, you do.
Yep. So if property assessments are now on, years ago it used to be you'd have an assessor go out, and if someone put on a new doorstep or something like that, you knew your assessment was going to come up. If you put on a new deck, or if you put on an extension on your house or a piece on your house. But now I'm trying to understand this. Assessments are calculated by market value, correct? So houses that have sold in 2021 that was like hugely above the asking price or the assessments or what's it called? Evaluations or whatever. Yeah. Yes. So anyway, that has seen a rise in what assessments have. What does building permits do to that? Because if it's a building permit taken out, it may be a year before anything's even built. So that's what I'm trying to understand. If that makes sense to you, it makes sense in my head.
certainly, we'll take a look at those building permits, and if they haven't started, we don't add any value. We sort of keep following them until they're completed, sort of thing. But Rod, did you want to add anything?
Sure. Just to expand on that a little bit, I think the question relates to how we would determine if a building permit had actually been.
Just push your microphone.
Okay.
Hopefully that helps. I think the question relates a little bit to how we would determine if a building permit had actually been physically completed or not. So we receive a status from the municipality as part of our data sharing arrangement that we have with the municipality, the District of Lunenburg, as well as other municipalities, where if a building inspector has visited the site, we can see if that project has been started yet. And then additionally to that, we are out every fall completing site inspections to determine the state of completion. So the building permit lets us know that something may be happening, okay, and our staff confirm if it is indeed happening or not, or the degree to which it's happening. So if a property is 50% completed as of that December 1st state date, so for this year, that's December 1st, 2022.
Okay.
Whatever physically existed on the property as of that date, our understanding of that physical state of the property, that's what goes on to the assessment roll. So if you didn't start construction until December 10th, December 15th of 2022, that value, whatever that contributory value is to that property, wouldn't be added until the following year's assessment roll. And the reverse happens for demolitions as well. So we hang our hats on that December 1st state date per the Assessment Act.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Bolivar-Getson, before I let them continue.
Thank you. And I just want to go back to value on January 1st. And just an observation. So we're going to see significantly increased assessment roll next year. What we're experiencing already and what I'm seeing in the real estate market is a slowing, and a more realistic values are coming back into play. This whole thing about sight on scene drove assessments ridiculous, a new term to most people, but it became a real thing during COVID. houses, properties sold for well over assessment values, well over market value. Bidding wars started. Has there ever been, and I know I was on NSFM meeting the other day when this was presented, has there ever been a reduction in the assessment role? Because I see it coming. I really see it coming based on we're going to definitely experience recession-like environment here in a few years.
Yeah. It's a very good question and a good observation. Certainly, just to sort of step back a little bit, we review. The good thing about being 1 year back, we actually have the actual sales data.
Yes.
So we can actually look at true sales. We're not projecting. We're not prognosticating or anything like that for the 2024 role. So we just follow the data. However, some of the sales may have been considered outliers, we'll put it that way, whereby we look at them and we determine, is that true market value, or do we put an asterisk beside that one? But we do mass appraisal. It's based on medians, means, where's the bulk of the evidence taking us, and we don't make, significant increases lightly. It's all based on the data, and I'll show you a little bit of I have a graph that might show you a little bit of that. But the other thing, as far as would it go down? Well, I can only say that in the 7 years that both Rod and I have been involved with PVSC, it has not. But could it? Theoretically, yes. If the data shows us that it needs to go down, we'll look at the data will tell us that.
But have we ever experienced a market like we have in the last 3-4 years?
Yeah, I've been around a little more than 7 years for that type of stuff. I don't recall it ever being. It's kind of unprecedented.
It's certainly safe to say unique market conditions, no doubt.
Yeah.
I think with a lot of what's been in the media recently surrounding the slowing or cooling of the property market, a lot of what's reported comes from the sort of from realtors looking at listings, looking at sales volume. So it's important to understand. We look at closed market sales, so we review all of the sales that come through the deeds registry, all of them. So the sight unseen sales that may have represented some overpayment in relation to other sales, but also sales that may have represented a little bit of an underpayment. Like everything, kind of everyone is sort of typically motivated to acquire property, and we look at all of those sales, as Paul mentioned, and go to the median to make a consistent movement of the assessment roll to follow the market as sort of reasonably and consistently as possible. But I think it's important when we talk about, certainly we understand the market is currently cooling, there's no doubt, and that, that cooling will be reflected, but whether sale prices actually decline or whether it's just a difference in volume. So the market can significantly cool without there being a significant decline in sale price. So if the average sale price in Lunenburg has increased, and let's say it's 400,000 now, this would be like MLS stats, and this is not the number, I'm just...
Probably not far off.
I'm frankly just sort of throwing it out there just to say, as an example, if it's 400,000, that we could see a drop of millions of dollars in sales activity year over year, but that median or average sale price could still stay the same or even slightly increase. So the realtors would be saying that the market had declined significantly because less volume is moving, less things are being sold. But if that sale price remains the same, then that's going to continue to be reflected in the assessments. Hopefully that sort of provides a little bit of context.
And if I could just on that, when you spoke about properties in an area selling, you use like properties in a similar areas, do you not, when you set the assessment?
That's correct, exactly.
So a bungalow in Baker Settlement, a bungalow in Hebbville, a bungalow in wherever would all be that bungalow. It's not every house in Baker Settlement that's sold to create that market value.
No, we base it on, having enough sales in an area that we can justify or defend the movements or whatever. Typically we're looking for at least 6 or 8 or 10.
And
mass
I think
appraisal world. Some neighborhoods you might not, in some of the rural areas, even if it's a hot market, we might not have seen any sales, and it's difficult for us to move the market in those neighborhoods as much as we would in a neighborhood where it's moving much more quickly?
In an area where we don't see sales activity, we would look at the surrounding market evidence to determine. Yeah. So when I used to do the reassessment, I did not complete this year's reassessment. I'm sort of in a different role within PVSC now, but I have in the past completed the reassessment for the municipality of Lunenburg, and what I would often do is I would look at, so where's the sales data telling us in the macro, like what's the whole municipality doing, mm-hmm. and then look at each area, and that can tell you whether an area has moved more or moved less in relation to surrounding areas. But it's the data that we collect on each property that tells us how that property fits into the marketplace as well. So as you mentioned, if it's a bungalow, it's going to, our understanding of what that is, what exists on the site there, and it ties back into building permits as well, it's our understanding of what's there that helps determine that assessment as well. So, of course, the assessment's not the same for a much larger house or a much smaller,
well,
older, newer,
my
this type of thing.
Can you mute her?
Well, do we, is she wanting to speak?
No.
Councillor Staton, did you wish to speak?
Oh, I haven't been saying anything.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Sorry about that.
All right. And I must also apologize, Your Worship, in the formalities of council and everything. I do recognize you're over there because this is committee the whole meeting. But I'm
That's
so
all right. Kathy was enjoying it.
I'm so used to addressing the chair as Your Worship.
Yeah. We're in finance committee.
Finance committee. Okay, yeah. Very good. All right, so I'll move along and accept my apologies, please.
Okay.
In determining, I'll elevate you to Your Worship. In determining market value, we use three approaches depending on the property type. We have the sales comparison approach. A lot of times it's for residential properties where we just talked about comparing sales and setting market values. The income approach, where we determine the income that's the property is generating or has the potential to generate, and we convert the net operating income to a market value. Apartment buildings where they're renting out spaces, office buildings, strip malls, hotel motels, those types of things, we use the income approach. And the cost method, whereby we essentially take the calculate the land value, and then we add the cost to construct or to replace that building and then deduct off depreciation. A little more difficult for older buildings because it can be challenging to get the depreciation amount right. A lot of times it's a little more subjective in nature. So I'm going to pretty much skip right by this slide. I think you've seen it before, but there's many influences in market value. Supply and demand. Shortage of supply the last couple of years and excess of demand. So this might talk a little bit to your previous question. When the pandemic started in 2020, our data scientists wanted to take a look at the data. You know, they wanted to try to figure out, are the historic norms going to hold true through the pandemic? So they went back to 2013. So if you look at the far left of this chart, it essentially looks like it starts in 2014, but they went to 2013. And they said, how are the actual average sales values in the province going to compare, and what would we anticipate as we go through this pandemic based on historic numbers? So they followed and tracked the historic numbers, and they also modeled the anticipated number. Since 2013, you can see two lines there. It's hard to see, but there's a black and a red line starting at about that 2014 horizontal axis there. They follow each other, following the seasonal trends through the years, 2014, 2016, 2018, very closely, and it starts to increase a little bit as you head into 2020. So based on that trending and the historic numbers, what they would have anticipated would have been the red line to continue through. You can see it continuing through at a slight upward slope, 2020, 2022. However, when the pandemic started to really have its impact on the markets in Nova Scotia, you can see where the black dotted line diverged significantly from the red anticipated line or what would have been historic trending. So it went up steeply, and it continued up steeply from 2020 through 2021, right until the very top in the middle of 2022, so about 6-7 months ago. And then, as per the comment of what happens if value is going to, or our value is going to, well, what we're seeing is that it has cooled off. And we don't know what's going to happen in 2022. As I mentioned, we don't project. We don't sort of try to speculate or anything like that. We will take that 2022 data. We now have it, you know, 35,000 qualified sales that we use for our market testing. We will start testing that. And we will test that over the next 6 months. That's for the 2024 roll. But you'll see, you know, in and around between 20 and 22 on this slide, there's two orange goalposts that go straight up. That represents the 2021 calendar year, and that's the black dotted line represents the sale value trending during that time across the province. So it's up considerably. So I'll leave that slide at that, but you can see that it was essentially unprecedented times.
If you could just go back to that. You made the comment about during COVID the increase in Nova Scotia. The increase happened across the country, did
sure
it not?
Did.
Yeah. It wasn't isolated too.
Yeah.
I know that we definitely had a huge increase in people coming this way, but it seemed to be the case throughout the country.
It was. You know, I think people were looking for places that they felt safe and also
out of the big cities.
They could work from home as well.
Yeah.
So those types of places. So this is what we were reading about: soaring material costs, home prices remain high. You'll all recall this was 2021. The headlines are different in 2022, but this, and so things such as prices up 18%, those types of things. So I want you to keep that in mind. That's what your 2023 assessment roll is based on. Rod's going to walk you through some numbers here.
Thank you all. Good morning again, everyone. So I have just a couple of more slides here to share with you, and I have a bit of information that I've just jotted down to bring some, hopefully, a little bit of relevance to these numbers. And certainly feel free, Your Worship, or any of the councillors, if you'd like to jump in with any questions as we go here. So a sort of brief one-page summary of the 2023 assessment roll for Municipality of the District of Lunenburg. So $4.43 billion in total assessed value, the vast majority of which is residential assessment. So as many of you are aware, Municipality of the District of Lunenburg being a rural municipality, a little bit more residential assessment than the province overall, but this is relatively consistent with the province of Nova Scotia as a whole. So $4.16 billion in residential assessment with $264 million in commercial assessment. Once you contemplate the cap impact, I have a couple of slides that talk in more detail on cap, and we usually get a couple of questions in these sessions about cap, so certainly happy to answer those. Once we contemplate cap, the cap impact on residential assessment, so these are property owners that have a capped assessment or taxable assessment that is lower than the assessed value that we are recommending for that property based on the market as of the previous year, as Paul mentioned, that number is $3.45 billion. We had a relatively busy building permit season in Lunenburg County, as in the rest of the province. We had about 16,000 building permits in the province of Nova Scotia last year. 768 of those were within the municipality of the District of Lunenburg. I had, I think, three assessors out looking at building permits. I may have even looked at a couple myself. So 768 permits in total that would have been reviewed to determine, getting back to the original question on whether there is a change in value or not. We reviewed 1,657 property transactions that are relevant to this year's assessment roll. So those would be property transactions that were qualified. There would have been more transactions than that number in the 2021 calendar year, the base year for this year's assessments.
That's 1657 is what we're using to look at the market. That would include residential and commercial sales, so they would be used for different purposes. But 1657 was the total number of what we call qualified sales, sales that represented market activity within the municipality.
Mayor Bullock-Getson.
I'm just looking at that number. You said just over 16,000 building permits, 768. 20% of the building permits were in MODL? For the province? Is that right? Am I wrong in that number?
I think 20 would be a little high, right? 768. Now you're testing my math.
You said 16,000.
Yeah.
It's pretty close to 20% of the building permits, is it not? I got to be wrong.
Yeah, 2%.
4.8%. 4.8%,
okay. I think is still significant.
And
given that there's 49 municipalities. But
Year over year, and I don't see those numbers here, how does that compare, do you know?
Do you have the permit numbers, Paul? I was going to speak briefly on the assessment
and
lift
even
and
on the transaction.
Get used to the technology. The numbers I have for residential, 2022 was a little busier with 922 is the number I have.
Wow.
And 800.
That
would make sense. I think this is all including all types of permits, such as even if there's development permits and $0 permits and everything else. So it doesn't quite match up with that permit number that Rod has. But for 2020, I'll walk it back using apples for apples. 863 residential-related type of permits or requests type of thing. 2022 was 922, and 2021 was 781. So you've been pretty busy for the past 3 years, even through this sort of pandemic
type
of period.
The big uptick was the calendar year 2021, like beginning of the pandemic, when we really started to see that bump in not only, you know, it's important, there's sort of two contexts to building permits as well, because theoretically your permit number could increase, but your dollar value added to your taxable assessment for those permits could actually go down, depending on what the permits were. They could be change in use permits, they could be permits for decks, sheds, small items, or you could have one very large permit, such as what's adjacent to you here, that would have a very significant effect on your overall sort of permit value if that permit is being added. So the interesting example with the project next door here is that because it's not completed, of course, we would expect to see more of that permit value in the 2024 assessment roll year than we will this year. Appeals. So we had 312 assessment appeals in 2022. Appeals across the province in 2022 were increased significantly because we started to see the effect of that COVID market. And we always expect to see some increase to assessment appeals when we move assessments more year over year. Additionally, last year was the first year in a number of years where we had a fairly large consumer price index applied to the capped assessments. And especially, this is of significant relevance here in Lunenburg County. I'm going to talk more about cap in the future slides. But when you have a larger consumer price index, that's the change in taxable assessment that the typical property owner, residential property owner, is seeing, because the majority of properties are capped. So even if we move the market assessments by, say, 15, 16, 18, 20% year over year, what that CPI is what the average property owner is seeing as the change. And even though that number is provided to us and can't be appealed, and I'll talk a bit more about that in a moment, we often see quite a bit of inquiry and appeal traffic on that number. So we expect to see increased appeal volume when we move the assessments more. And that would be consistent. We haven't closed our appeal period yet, so we still have Wednesday and Thursday of this week. So we finish at midnight on February 9th. That's Thursday night, as Paul mentioned. But we have seen an increase in appeal numbers this year in the municipality of Lunenburg and throughout Nova Scotia. So last year we had about 7,500 appeals province-wide, and 312 of those would have been in Lunenburg County. I'll just move to the next slide. Oh, and I'll just touch briefly on the overall increases as well, and just bring it back to like how it's relative, because we see the total number here. Total residential assessment lift 20.1% in the municipality of Lunenburg this year. That's up significantly in the 2022 assessment roll year. Last year it was 10.2%. In 2021, 2.7%. So it's almost, you know, exponential assessment growth in the past couple of years. So from a municipal perspective, in terms of taxable dollars, certainly a good news story. However, of course, you know, we certainly understand that we have to defend these assessment numbers as well. And we follow the market. We have to follow Section 42 of the Act, and we move with the market. Once we contemplate caps, so getting into the difference between that $4.16 billion and the $3.45 billion on the slide here, 12.2% lift on residential taxable, including cap this year. That's up from 8.8% in 2022 and 2.5% in 2021. So, again, sort of some significant increases there. I'll touch briefly as well, and I'm going to talk about commercial assessment also, but this is kind of an interesting stat, cap percentage of residential dwellings. So when we move assessments significantly, and I remember we had talked, Your Worship, about this last year in the presentation a little bit, and sort of how things move. When assessments move in excess of CPI, the further the difference is between the consumer price index, the way the capped properties are adjusted based on the Nova Scotia government, Section 45 of the Act, when the difference becomes greater between how we move the assessments and what the CPI is, we typically see the percentage of residential dwellings in a municipality that are capped increase, because it's benefiting more property owners because those properties were increased. More properties become capped. A good example, I'll use my house, since I am a resident of Modal and I've owned my property since 2015. I've had a cap 3 years out of seven. So because I purchased in 15, I was relatively close between my cap and my market, and it sort of comes on, comes off, comes on, comes off when the market isn't moving. But in the last 2 years where the assessments have increased significantly, then you get sort of locked into that cap, and you have that sort of benefit to your taxable assessment from a billing perspective. So
it's the CPI... it's the difference between that and the market value, and the market value has increased a lot more than
exactly
what CPI has in the last however many years.
Yes, yeah, so
even with the increase in CPI, it's still a significant difference.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
If you look at that 20% increase in assessment compared to what CPI was,
so CPI is 7.7% this year. So there's a significant increase to CPI as well. It was also relatively high last year.
Or the Everyone's cap would have increased more.
Grocery store or gas station lately, we're seeing some sort of significant inflationary pressure on our personal and professional lives, I would say. But and CPI has to reflect that through the legislation. But looking at the trending on CPI, 2021 it was 0.3%, so almost nothing. 5.4% in 2022, 7.7% in 2023. But the assessment gains are even outpacing CPI by a significant amount. So what we're seeing is more properties capped as a result. What works in the opposite direction is when properties sell, they come off of cap for 1 year. So we have an active property market as well, but when we look at percentage of capped dwellings within the municipality of Lunenburg, it's still increasing significantly, 12% from last year. So we had 76% of residential dwellings capped in 21, 75% in 2022 actually went down a little bit. That might be a result of the very active market in 2020 for properties in the municipality, and then we're back up to 87% in 2023. I'll talk briefly about commercial assessment. So overall commercial assessment lift in the municipality, 8.4% for 2023. That's up from 1% in 2022. So we're still seeing a lot of sectors of commercial property in sort of recovery mode from COVID. The industrial sector was very, very strong. You don't have a lot of that type of construction or that sort of valuation class within the municipality. So your largest commercial accounts, as you know, typically Walmart, Canadian Tire, and Highliner, just outside of Bridgewater, outside of Lunenburg, sorry, as well. When we look at commercial taxable, it's 11.8%. So that's taking out exempt stuff. So like the school next door, which is your largest commercial account in total. But of course, it's not generating a tax bill, so it's sort of in a different bucket, if you will. So I'm going to move on to the next slide. So I sort of touched on this briefly already, but just getting back to commercial property and some differences in this sector. So I'll start with the right-hand slide, so accommodation property. So properties such as on the South Shore, we have like White Point and the Quarter Deck and some of the larger sort of resort-style accommodation properties where we're still seeing them in recovery mode from COVID. So they're not we haven't applied significant increases to that sector. The office and industrial sector was very strong, so indicative of demand for space due to increased demand for warehousing. So we're seeing a lot in Burnside and Ragged Lake Industrial Park in Halifax where there's a lot of increased demand for this class of property. Again, there's not a lot of this type of property within the municipality, but just to touch on it as a whole. Overall commercial in the province was up just over 7%, I believe, but industrial was up about 14%. And then, sorry, go ahead.
So the taxation on or the assessments on accommodation type facilities, Best Western,
yeah.
White Point, not in our municipality, but that comes in at a different formula, the way you calculate that, correct?
Exactly. So
it's based on room nights or something
It's based on how, on their occupancy. So how,
yes.
Like, so if they have a high vacancy rate due to a global pandemic, for instance, and they can establish that with us, then we look at those assessments, determine whether they need to stay the same, go down, go up. So how those assessments have moved year over year is very different than how, say, a residential assessment would move because it's a different market. So we decide what's the most appropriate way to value this property and then base it on that. Multifamily apartment buildings, which are typically classified as residential property, these properties, as Paul mentioned, we collect the income data and use that to determine, because these properties are typically held as an investment-bearing or an income-bearing investment, we use the income as reported and then normalized for the market to determine what the value of that property should be. And we saw residential housing, due to the sort of shortage of housing throughout the province and throughout the country, we're seeing quite strong demand for multifamily development.
So those decreases in the commercial accommodation type buildings, are those carried over year, or is it only in that fiscal that it's calculated in?
So we're looking at the market conditions as of the base date. So we'd be looking at the end of 2021 for this year. So a lot of the accommodation properties, hotels, motels, guest houses, this type of thing in the province of Nova Scotia that have been identified, those properties, they're not seeing a decline this year, but what we've looked at is we're not seeing any increase from the 2022 assessment roll based on the end of 2020 because we're kind of looking at how did the value of those properties change in the year 2021, and because that whole year was COVID, we didn't see the same pattern as we saw in residential property, if that makes sense. So I think my next slide is getting into a little bit about the cap. So capped assessment program. So provincial legislation places a cap on eligible property, which limits taxable value increases, and the cap rate is based on the Nova Scotia Consumer Price Index, called the CPI, set by Statistics Canada and provided to us by the Nova Scotia government every November. So Paul has included a little table here of Nova Scotia's CPI and modal percent cap. I've walked you folks through that information already, but having a look at it, it's very interesting to see how there's sort of a direct relationship between the increase in CPI and the percentage cap, but really what's happening there is it's the percentage of increase that we've applied to assessed values that's bringing more properties onto the cap. An interesting thing about cap is sort of a great marketing term, Section 45 of the Assessment Act, in the sense that it creates the expectation with many property owners, in my experience, that the assessment is frozen and will not change at all. But part of Section 45 is that we have to apply that consumer price index annually to each property. So a capped assessment does change. It just doesn't change based on what the market is doing. It changes based on the CPI. There are years in a flat market where the CPI may exceed the market change, but cap can only ever be of your benefit. So if your market assessment, your assessed value based on that base date, our sales information, is lower for any reason than your capped assessment as calculated, then we're going to take the lower of the two. That's going to be your taxable assessment and what your cap calculation is based on for the next year forward. So it always sort of resets to that lower number. And I have a slide to explain that as the next slide here. So many of you are in possession of one of these. This is a 2023 property assessment notice. We change it up a little every year just to keep everyone on their toes, but it looks very similar to previous years. So there's five columns on the assessment notice. This is sort of a relatively straightforward, typical property, very likely a residential home sitting on a piece of land. So the assessed value as calculated, this is what we feel the property as it physically existed on December 1st of 2022. So if it was built in 2022 and completed in 2022, we imagine if that property were to be sold at the end of 2021, as of January 1st, 2022, the base date, that's the number that we come up with, that $416,800. The capped assessment in this case is the lower of the two numbers. That's the third column. So we don't have enough information in this slide to be able to determine what that $372,300 is based on, but judging by the difference between the two, I would imagine this is a property that has been capped maybe for 3 or 4 years. That $372,300 would be whatever this property owner's cap was for 2022, last year, plus 7.7%, presuming that there has been no other physical changes to the property. So when a property is changed as a result of a building permit or any sort of requisite changes to data, so a sales investigation can be another reason where we would update data as a result of a sale, that can change a cap calculation as well. So if there's physical changes to a property, it typically will change your capped assessment and also your assessed value. So the lower of the two, as I mentioned, is your taxable assessed value. This is the number that the municipality will calculate the property owner's tax bill based on. In this case, it's the lower of the two numbers, 372, 300. We have totals in each column at the bottom. This typically comes into play more in properties with multiple tax classes. So it's possible for properties, very typically, for instance, in the municipality of Lunenburg, if a property was a rural agricultural property, there may be multiple tax classes on that property. So they may have farm-exempt land, residentially classified land, such as a farmhouse that is that portion would be eligible for cap, and then they may, in some cases, have a commercial classification as well. So perhaps there's a farm stand or another business operating on part of the site that would have a commercial tax rate applied to it, and those classifications would be listed below where it says residential taxable in this example. Go ahead.
Councillor Vito?
Yeah, I just have two questions.
Sure.
Can you restate what makes somebody eligible for the cap?
Sure.
That's my first question.
I'll try and cover the exhaustive list here, but I will say that the entire list is contained on our website at pvsc.ca as well in more detail. But basically, 50% or more owned by a Nova Scotia resident. So what that means is you have to live in the province for 6 months of the year. It has to be three residential living units or less, so fourplexes, fiveplexes, anything larger than that is out. It has to be residential property. What that means is classified as residential property. If it's a commercial property, it's not eligible for cap. If it's an improved resource property, so let's say a large acreage with a building on it, it's not eligible. If it's vacant resource property, so classified, it would show on your notice as resource taxable. It's generating a taxable, but it's vacant. That would typically be eligible for CAP. Enrollment in CAP is automatic. So we calculate eligibility annually, and we calculate the CAP base year, what year that assessment is based on annually, and sort of bring it forward based on the consumer price index. Some other eligibility requirements, if a property transacts on the open market, not within a family, typically the cap is reset based on that transaction. So the future owner will also be eligible for cap and be enrolled should they meet the other criteria. However, their cap base year, the assessment that cap is based on, changes at the time of the purchase. So if you sell a property to me tomorrow, then whatever cap you had sort of disappears, that is reset, essentially, and then we take a look at the sales investigation, make sure all of the data, everything we have assessed to that property is correct, and then I would be capped in the following year. So you're not eligible for cap in the year following your purchase. So everyone who purchased on the open market in 2022 would not be eligible this year in 2023. There's two reasons for that. One is so we are able to look at the data and make sure what is capped is correct for that property in case there's any data changes that we pick up as a result of the sales review, but also because there wouldn't really be any advantage to it, because if you added the CPI to the first year, the cap would actually just be greater. It wouldn't be of any advantage. So there has to be sort of that point where there's a difference, presuming that assessments keep moving upward. So in 2024, my cap would be whatever the assessment is on that property in 23 plus whatever the CPI is for next year. Does that answer your question? Great. I'll just move to the next slide. So I'll talk very quickly about the inquiry and appeal period. The most important part of this slide, I think, is that it's nearly over. So Thursday at midnight is the last is the deadline for us to receive appeals. All of this information is on the 2023 assessment notices. The appeal form is on the back. What I've mentioned to all of the councils we've talked with this year is I think we really encourage property owners to reach out and discuss their assessment with us. And it's not because we are trying to, everyone has a statutory right under the Assessment Act to be able to file an assessment appeal. And we don't ask you to call because we're going to try and talk you out of appealing necessarily. It's to understand what the grounds of appeal are and determine if that's the appropriate course of action or not. So there are always going to be appeals that are relevant. So an example is physical data that was unknown to us at the time of, at the state date, December 1st of 2022, that may affect the market value of that property. So if your basement had 3 feet of water in it on December 1st and it has not been remediated, but for whatever reason we were not made aware of it, because typically you don't get a building permit for a basement flood specifically, it may be sort of unique conditions to that property. Or the property is vacant, power has been disconnected, it's been vacant for a number of years, but if we haven't been notified of that, we make a sort of a set of typical assumptions surrounding the condition of each property in the province of Nova Scotia. So these are what we would call sort of a relevant appeal. But there's also cases, I mentioned earlier, we get a lot of questions on the Nova Scotia Consumer Price Index. So we'll have a property owner phone. They have a capped assessment that is, say, 60% of their assessed value. So they're assessed at, say, $400,000, and their cap is, $230,000 or $240,000. So there's a significant difference between their taxable assessment and the capped assessment. And we may receive a call whereby someone has some questions about the Nova Scotia Consumer Price Index, how it's calculated, why it is applied to the capped assessments. And we're certainly happy to look at the cap eligibility, look at everything on the property, and make sure the data is correct. But I always instruct our assessors on the phone to just explain that when you submit an assessment appeal, you're appealing the assessed value. So as part of that appeal, we always review the cap calculation and make sure everything is correct. And if there's been an error in the cap calculation, we're able to correct that. But we can't change the consumer price index from 7.7 to 3%. It's just not within our legislated ability to do that. So those changes that happen to the cap, assuming it's been calculated correctly, essentially can't be appealed within PVSC. So appeal period ends February 9th. We have had a little bit of increased phone traffic this year as a result of the increased assessments and the larger CPI as well. And I'm pleased to report it's been going quite well. We added additional staff to our provincial phone system. So you're able to phone in, and it's sort of a three-tiered system whereby if you want to discuss your assessed value, you're steered directly to one of our assessors to talk about that. If you have an administrative inquiry, so you just want to change a mailing address, which we receive calls on quite often as well, you're sort of directed to a different stream, to one of our customer service representatives who can help property owners with that. Appeals can be emailed, mailed, or faxed. The vast majority of our appeals come in by email. The most important thing is we need a signed copy of that appealed form. So it's as easy as sort of taking a photo with your phone of that appeal form on the back of your assessment notice, but we need to have that signed copy. In cases, this is something we hear of every so often, someone has moved, they've not updated their mailing address, they haven't received a physical assessment notice. That doesn't preclude your right to appeal in Nova Scotia. So we have a generic appeal form on our website. All you need is the assessment account number, which we would be happy to provide to property owners over the phone. You're able to fill that form out, and you can still submit an appeal for 2023. So just a little bit more detail on the appeal process. Should a property owner disagree with their assessment, they are able to file an appeal. The first level is the PVSC initial assessor review. So this is something that I handle quite a lot of in my role within PVSC. So I have a number of assessors who will review appeals. Typically, we have assessors assigned to certain areas of the province. Paul mentioned that municipality of the District of Lunenburg is probably one of the best covered municipalities in terms of residents of the municipality who work for PVSC. I think there's about probably five of us within the municipality of the District of Lunenburg by choice. And so what our assessors do is they call, typically we'll make contact with the property owner and understand the grounds of the appeal, confirm the data on the account, make sure that we have everything correct, and then explain a little bit about how the process works from there. So typically we will take a look at the sales information to determine if that assessment is supported in the market or not, based on our understanding of the best comparable sales in the area, and we issue a written decision. So it's either what's called a confirmation notice, indicating we're not recommending a change to the assessment, or it's an amended assessment notice with a new value on it, typically a lower value in that case. If a property owner continues to be dissatisfied at that point, they have 14 days to appeal again to the Nova Scotia Assessment Appeal Tribunal, and all of those instructions are contained on the confirmation notice or notice of amended assessment. The Nova Scotia Assessment Appeal Tribunal is typically a sort of a further formalized process whereby a third-party court chair appointed by the appeal tribunal will meet typically virtually since COVID and hear both sides. So they hear from the director, the representative for the director of assessment, typically one of our assessors, to present value evidence as to why they feel the assessments shouldn't change. And the property owner has the opportunity to present their reasons for why they feel the assessment should change. A written decision is issued that is received both by the municipality as well as by PVSC, and that decision is binding for that assessment roll year. So if there is a reduction recommended by the court chair, we're required to apply that. If there continues to be a disagreement between parties at that point, it is possible to further formalize an appeal and continue to the Nova Scotia Utility and Review Board as well. So our contact information is here. We can be reached anytime at our 1-800 number. We have both assessors and our customer service representatives on the phone during business hours to answer questions from property owners. We can be reached at inquiry@pvsc.ca. We do have a mailing address for our service center in Truro as well, and a fax number for anything appeal related. This information is all available on our website at pvsc.ca as well. So again, thank you very much. I'd like to thank everyone for their time today and a couple of great questions, and I'll turn it over to Council and Your Worship if you have any further questions.
Okay, thank you so much. Councillor Reno.
Just one more question. Sure. If you own more than one property, are you eligible to have them all capped, or is it just your primary residence?
If they all met the other eligibility requirements, yes. So as long as, and I think I didn't mention that in the eligibility, the property can't be registered in the name of a business. So commercially classified property is out, but so is property that is owned by a business. So if you have a house and it's registered as, 902739 Nova Scotia Incorporated, that would be out on the basis of registration. So when folks own multiple properties, that sometimes can be the case. But if the properties are held in a personal name, there's no requirement for occupancy specifically for CAP. So if the properties met the other eligible requirements and the owner was a Nova Scotia resident, then typically yes.
Councillor Greek?
Thank you. You had mentioned, farm stands when you gave commercial as an, you had mentioned when you were talking about commercial rates, you mentioned farm stands. I'm just wondering where would farm stands really fall under commercial? Like, say I grew an abundance in my garden this year and it's a little too much for my family, and I put up a farm stand for a couple of weeks. Would that fall under commercial?
So I would say it's a great question. I think our sort of test in terms of commercial classification is sort of retail operations. So what we look at, of course, we review the municipal building permit process. So if there's a process underway on a property, we receive a notification that there's a change in use permit to adjust a use from residential to commercial use, and that's certainly something that we investigate. There's other reasons why we would visit a property, so such as a permit or appeal process, a sales investigation where a property has changed hands, and perhaps within that sales investigation it was discovered that there may be a commercial use on that property. That's certainly something we would investigate as well. With an individual farm stand, it's really a difficult test to answer, Michelle, like in terms of if someone is conducting business where folks are visiting the site and that becomes known to us, we typically would look at that to determine if a commercial assessment is appropriate or not, but it's really a case-by-case basis, if that answers your question.
It sort of does. It's very fuzzy, or it seems to be very fuzzy to me, where the line is for commercial and not commercial. Like a bookkeeping service that someone's just dropping off papers would not be commercial because they're not using the property? They're not frequently having customers?
What we typically look at in terms of the burden to apply a portion of commercial classification to a property surrounds one of the things we really look for is things like a sign. If there's parking on site for directly related to the business, and if business is being transacted on site, so if customers are coming and going regularly from that site, then that's when we start thinking about a commercial assessment being appropriate. So, of course, many of us now work from home. Because you have a home office, that doesn't mean that you're going to have a commercial assessment on your property. It's really that sort of retail operation where people are coming and going from the site. That's really the test, or things like a sign advertising a business at that location.
I think if I can jump in too, you'll recall we spoke about base date, which is December the 1st. So it's typically tied to that date too as to what the property is being used for at that time. For a seasonal, sort of like a farm stand, typically wouldn't be operating in the winter. So if it's like a movable structure or a temporary structure that's up for a couple of weeks, you know, we kind of have to look at it. It can be a little bit fuzzy. If it's a farm market that's there every year and it's kind of affixed to the ground and it's commercial activity, then that's more of a duck. If it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck. It's, but also in the definition of market value, it's in the opinion of the assessor. So it's the preponderance of the evidence, and we will make a decision. And they can always appeal it if they decide, no, I shouldn't be commercial or, you know, whatever. But we do have to make a call sometimes where it's kind of on the fence.
Another example that comes to mind for me is the sort of, a yard sale or a yard sale that went on for 3 or 4 weeks. You know, would that be considered commercial or would it not? You know, and as Paul mentioned, we really look at that state date, December 1st, what's happening at that point. And again, like, it's got to be a duck. You know, is this a business? Is this a retail operation? If it is, it's something that we certainly have to look at. But for these sort of if it's something that is like very short term and very temporary in nature, I know I've seen a few. It seems to be gaining popularity. Some of these sort of pop up markets that seem to be happening around the county and surrounding areas. And so, if it's sort of a one shot thing, it's not really the same thing. But something that's continually operating, that's when we really have to start to look at it. If there's a sign, if it's operating continuously, if there's permanent structures associated with that business, then we really have to look at it certainly.
Work from home doesn't apply either. We don't want to be the work from home police or anything like that. We've had that question before as well. If someone sets up an office in their home and they're now working from home, is that commercial? We don't consider it to be commercial. If they're advertising, if they've got infrastructure built around, if they got a separate entrance, if it's apparent and they're doing commercial business, and that's a different thing.
Anything else? May I ask one more?
Yes,
sure.
One more. Yeah.
What if it's a sign similar to like the Avon lady lives here. People have those up year round, many years.
I would.
I wouldn't speculate as to what it would be assessed. It would depend on what we see. The one that's a very good example, or that we get quite a bit, is sort of someone has a hair salon or a hair shop in the home or whatever. Like, if they're doing it for family and friends, and they get a chair and a room or whatever, and they do it, that's one thing. If they've got a separate entrance, if they got cars coming and going, if they have signs, if they're on the web, if they're out there advertising. So, yes, there are gray areas, and we have to make a decision. So sometimes, as you can appreciate, some of those operators don't agree with our opinion, but we do have to make an assessment of it. And like I say, we try to look at all the evidence and which way, does the scale tip, and then we make that decision.
The way the commercial classification works as well is it's not determinant on the amount of money that's being generated. It's determinant on the use. So that's a really important distinction in the sense that, you could be a professional working from home, and your income could be high, being earned from an office within the walls of your house 80-90% of the time perhaps, but it's not considered commercial because there's no retail happening there. There's no people aren't coming and going from the site. So that's sort of our interpretation of it. And again, getting back to Paul's example of the hair salon, if it's happening for family and friends, if it's very infrequent, it would be the number of hours, the amount of months within the year, all of those things would be contemplated when we're trying to make a decision on what's appropriate for a property and whether to split a classification. We also look at the type of property as well. So properties classified as commercial are often, they're sort of commercial by default. We have to ask ourselves the question, is this a resource property? Is it a farm property? Is it a residential property? If the answer is no to any of those things, then very likely it's commercial by default. So a hair salon operating in a standalone commercial building would be very different than a hair salon operating in the basement of a residential dwelling in a subdivision. It's sort of a different test in terms of, again, we're leaning on the same information, but it would be a lot harder for us to make a case that a fully commercial building was residential just on the basis that there was only a little bit of business happening there, but not much. It's that principle of commercial by default. What's the most likely use of this property is what we have to ask ourselves.
Did you have a supplementary?
No, I was just going to say that the definition that Rod just gave on commercial also brings up an interesting point in that we get a lot of calls about why is a church classified as commercial? Well, because it's not residential and it's not resource. So it falls into that. And just like not-for-profit community halls that are used, have been converted into art museums and things like that, it's not residential, it's not commercial. So we do get calls as to, well, why isn't this exempt, or why isn't it, why is it commercial and that type of thing. It is commercial. A church is not taxed as commercial. It's exempt taxable-wise, but a community hall that's owned by a group other than the municipality would be taxable, even if it's a not-for-profit. However, that's under your purview of the Municipal Government Act as to whether you want to give them a grant. So.
Yeah, there often is that sort of distinction between perhaps there are minimal or few taxes, like a bill being generated, but which side the exemption is occurring on. There sometimes can be a bit of confusion. And I can think with the church example of a couple of examples recently within Lunenburg County where we handled questions from property owners surrounding what's it going to take to make this church classified as residential. And certainly it's something we can contemplate and do, but we need to see that significant act. We want to see a change in use permit from the municipality to understand that it's consistent with the land use bylaw for that area, or a significant act to convince us that it could be used as a house. So many churches don't have a septic system. They might not have a well. They might not be able to be occupied for residential use. So just because you plan to do that in the future doesn't mean you can have that classification now. We have to see that significant act or that change.
Okay, we have Mayor Bolivar-Getson, and then I think we'll probably wrap up if there's no more questions.
I'm going to bring up the elephant that no one's talked about yet. But before I do that, I hope we don't spend a lot of time chasing down the cucumber stands and the tires for sale on side of the road or the whatever.
Only if we want some cucumbers.
I really think that you have much bigger fish to fry than those individuals. One of the things that we haven't talked about is the there's a lot of ducks out there. And there's a lot of ducks out there that are being treated as residential and they're actually commercial, and that's the Airbnbs.
Do you want me to take that grenade, Rod? Or?
I can take a stab at it, but...
Well, you know...
there's homes, I guess, that... There is. The market in this area, I guess, even in cottage country, whatever, I own a place in Queens County as well. And when I look at the amount of properties even in cottage country that have sold and are sitting as just Airbnbs...
It's dramatic.
And they are being taxed residential.
I think, you know.
And
I
those
guess,
are truly commercial properties.
I think there's some legislation that was that they're attempting to identify these, which would be helpful to us in order to identify them for sure.
So when we look at building permits, we don't look at Airbnb.
So we would look at it if changes to a property were made to accommodate an Airbnb. So let's say there's a renovation that takes place to a cottage in Queens County.
Or
we just understand as a result of a sales investigation, for instance, that there's been significant renovations to a property that we may not have been aware of, we absolutely will assess those renovations. So those changes, physical changes to property, regardless of the use, are always going to be reviewed when we become knowledgeable of them to understand the change to assessment. So if there's been buildings that have been built, if it's been sort of polished, I guess would be a good word for it, to accommodate a use such as Airbnb, we certainly address the physical differences. But section 47A, right, Paul, for B&B? I think?
I'll say sure.
Yeah, I'm going with it. 47A was amended in 2019 to... This was the piece of the Assessment Act that formerly handled bed and breakfasts and specified that bed and breakfasts with four bedrooms or less that served breakfast were residential property. So that portion of the Assessment Act was amended, and you can find it if you search the Assessment Act online now, that amendment to that section, an additional regulation with it, that specifies, it's called short stay accommodation now. They changed the wording, and all... That section of the Act, as amended, specifies that all property with four bedrooms or less is residential property. So what that means is if we are knowledgeable of an Airbnb, regardless of what income that property is producing or how many nights it's rented on Airbnb or owner-occupied or any of those things, it has to be residential under the Act as long as it's four bedrooms or less. If that particular owner, it kind of gets back to your CAF question, Chastity, like if that particular owner owns multiple properties in different areas and they are assessed separately and they had them as a group of assets, let's say, based on the way that the Act has specified our treatment of those properties, it's residential property if it's four bedrooms or less. Once it becomes greater than four bedrooms, then it's commercial property. So if there's... and certainly if there's properties where it's a fine line, again, getting into the ducks analogy, I recall one recently being brought forth to our purview whereby it was a one-bedroom house and three rental cottages. You may remember this one, Paul, where multiple rental cottages that had a bedroom but also a loft. So to what degree do you consider a loft to be a bedroom? So there sometimes can be a little bit of gray area, but it provides at least some clarity to us on how those properties are to be treated. And based on that amendment to the Act, it has to be residential property at this point. So that's the direction that's been provided to us by the Nova Scotia government.
So just supplementary. So even if you are aware that it's a Airbnb only,
absolutely,
if it has four bedrooms or less, it's still residential.
It wouldn't matter if they had a sign up.
And the home that has five bedrooms or more, that's truly a home, is commercial?
No.
Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure.
No.
I got to say.
Guest house. So if we become aware of an Airbnb that's operating and they have a website and they clearly indicate that, you know, this is a great house for a weekend with your extended family because we have six bedrooms for rent, and this is made very clear to us through either a change in use permit process, someone gives us a heads up, we become knowledgeable of it, we're certainly always happy to look at those properties and contemplate whether a commercial assessment is appropriate in those cases. And certainly we do that on a regular basis. But four bedrooms or less, it doesn't matter what is happening there in terms of short stay accommodation. It can be sort of have the appearance, you know, and some of these properties now do have like a sign out that says, you know, welcome to the beach villa or something like that. You know, we've all seen it out in the rural parts of the municipality. And those are based on the Act residential property at this point.
The other thing that gets a little bit tricky here too is what's a bedroom? Is a cot in an open, you know, the many of them you'll see advertised as we have a fold-out bed or whatever. Well, technically it's not a bedroom for rent, so they might have three bedrooms, but they also might have cots being able to be pulled out or whatever and these types of things. But so technically, you know, according to the Act, it's not four bedrooms for rent or four beds for rent per se, but it's a little bit tricky, just like the other questions that we had before. And and the other one that we've seen is they're buying up separate properties. Each may have two or three bedrooms on in them, but they're all separate PIDs. And they may be all lined up right across the, you know, the waterfront or out in the woods or whatever, but they're on separate PIDs, and each one is looked at separately. So you could have 20 bedrooms for rent on a website on four or five different properties right next door to each other, but technically that's five different Airbnbs, and they each have four bedrooms or less, and even though they're all advertised on the same site. So it gets tricky. It does. But we look at them, everyone that, you know, we get advised of and say, this, we think this should be commercial, we'll take a look at it.
And I we'll think see. With properties that, you know, if it previously was, say, it was rental cottages and you have like six cottages and then someone subdivides those six cottages into six lots, but they're still renting all of them, if the property was historically commercial, that's certainly something we would take a look at as to how the legislation applies to a unique situation like that. But in many cases, those properties already had a commercial classification, so it's a little bit different. It's a bit easier to identify them than the situation, as Paul mentioned, where someone has purchased maybe three or four cottages that are all sort of unique formerly single-family properties, but they're being held as sort of a group of investments, I guess, as we all have seen in rural Nova Scotia as of late.
So we better wrap it up, because I know somebody's going somewhere. Or so I heard.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Rod. Is there any more questions before we... Sandra? Michelle?
Okay. No, I'm fine. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We really appreciate the time.
Oh, it's your worship. It's fine. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone.
All right. Nothing else? Motion to adjourn. Moved by Councillor Hoobley. Seconded by Councillor Wynot. All those in favor? Councillor Greek? Councillor Greek, you in favor?
Yes.
Councillor Statton?
I'd like to see you go another hour, but yes.
All right, no problem. Okay.
You're already on vacation.
Motion carried unanimously.